Hey there, and welcome to the No Code SaaS podcast. This is the podcast where we talk about building a SaaS business without being a programmer. So building a profitable business that you can kind of sustain your lifestyle with without having to be a programmer. So I'm James, and I'm here with Kieran.
Hello, everyone.
Great to be back. It's our second podcast of the year. So yeah, great to be back, and we've had some great feedback from listeners as well over the last week. I have so we've got some interesting points to talk about today. Kieran, I don't know if you want to kick off with just giving us a quick update on what you've been working on. A couple of updates to YEP, I believe, have been happening.
Yeah, so I'll keep this short because I haven't been doing much, and certainly not as much as you. But yeah, I'm still doing some updates to YEP for Stephen, who is the acquirer, the buyer, and just helping him to improve it. So actually one big improvement was, for the first time since I put it in, really, I did some updates to how it integrates with OpenAI. I was doing like one big API call, which was taking like 30 seconds, sometimes a minute, to like return the contents of a web page. So I just split it up into multiple smaller calls. And so it's a lot faster now. Like, you get the heading and the subheading really, really quickly. And then it's actually now generating images using DALL-E 3 instead of relying on the Unsplash library, which was the tagging in that library is really bad. So often you just wouldn't get an image for a certain word, or it would just be totally random. So generating them with AI is working really well, but it is very expensive compared to, well, Unsplash was free. And generating them with AI when you're doing, four images per page to start off with is pretty expensive. So I'm not sure how long he's going to continue with that, but it looks really good. So that was quite interesting.
What kind of costs are you seeing per image? Is it like a couple of cents, or is it even more than that, like up into the dollars? Or
yeah, I'm not sure per image. I don't think it's into the dollars, but he said that like for one day the text generation costs were I think like a few cents for all the pages, and the image generations were like $20. So it's,
wow,
it's, yeah, several orders of magnitude bigger. But I guess that's, yeah, to be expected, because the text generation is just so delightfully cheap in comparison.
Definitely. Yeah, that's one thing I've noticed as well with building with OpenAI, is to be actually quite careful where you do put it into the product. When I first put it in to my app, I was having it do a ton of stuff in an automated fashion, like whether someone requested it or not, it would just kind of generate a ton of summaries. And yeah, like you quite quickly rack up big bills. So I switched to having everything AI related pretty much be on demand. User presses a button in the product and then the request is made and comes back. But yeah, I was finding I was kind of doing a lot of compute for even if someone wasn't logging in, which, yeah, you kind of got to keep an eye on those costs, haven't you? Because even though they tend to lower the prices over time of their models, it can get out of control. So it makes sense to do it on demand where possible, from what I've seen.
Yeah, definitely. And you also want to put in things to prevent people from spamming it, or, you know, your site might get hit by a bot that presses the button a million times and then you're screwed. So, yeah, I always have like limitations on the number of times someone can press it, and something to prevent them from pressing it multiple times within a certain time period. Because, yeah, you just don't want someone to get trigger happy and, you know, rinse you of all your MRR.
Yeah, absolutely. So that sounds like it's been that's an interesting development there, then to split that one big call up into the smaller ones. Has it had a big impact on speed as well? Has it helped with that?
Yeah, hugely. It's yeah, so different, because before it was like a very long prompt with like examples of good landing page copy, and then it was like return all of these different aspects like features and FAQs and like example stuff, like a letter from the founder. And if you think about typing that into ChatGPT and watching it type it out and how long that would take, the difference between that and just saying, okay, I want a headline and a subheading and text for the button, and that's all. And you give them like obviously a brief description of the page, and then it returns that within a few seconds as opposed to having to wait for the whole lot to be generated. So it's definitely much better to do it that way. I don't know in terms of how cost efficient it is to do it in multiple calls, but probably not that different because it's all just working on like tokens.
Yeah, no, makes sense. Yeah, cool. Sounds like positive, some positive moves there.
Yeah, and apart from that, I've just been working on this boilerplate, which I'm really hoping to get done by the end of this month. So I'm actually, yeah, just adding new little things and making it so that like all the Stripe works okay, webhooks and everything is set up, and it all works smoothly and users can upgrade and downgrade. And then I want to actually start building apps with it to make sure I've got the process down and that it's going to be easy for people who like use this boilerplate to just follow some simple instructions and customize it for their own app. So I'm going to just like build 5 different apps and hopefully they'll take a few hours each, which would be amazing to go from nothing to like, okay, here's a full SaaS with all the payments, everything, like emails, everything integrated, ready to go. And I did it in a few hours or half an hour or 10 minutes. I'll see what's possible.
So, I mean, that's it. It's like Bubble is already unbelievably quick to build stuff. So to improve on that by another factor of like 10 is really exciting. But yeah, you know, as we've discussed before, setting up a new project or a new app at the beginning, there is a lot of the same stuff you have to do every time. And interesting, you mentioned Stripe there, because that was something I wanted to touch on a bit later on, is that, you know, integrating Stripe with Bubble, because I think there are multiple different difficulty levels that you can do with integrating Stripe. Like you can just put a basic button, like you can use the built-in Bubble integration and do something super basic, or you can do something, you know, which I think will get you so far, probably gets you to your MVP. But actually, when you start processing payments at scale, you realize there are a lot more scenarios you've got to cover, like cancellations, cards expiring, all this other stuff. And how do you keep that in sync with Bubble? So that might be a good topic for us to kind of touch on later, because it sounds like your boilerplate is helping address some of that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So that bit can be at the end for all the nerds who want to stick around, and anyone else who's not interested in such technical detail can just tune out. But before that, I am desperate for an update on your 0 to 1K MRR in 60 days challenge with a new SaaS product. How is that going?
Yeah, no, it's been good. I mean, I've actually been super, super busy on the User Loop app as well. So after, I guess, a bit of a... it's always an interesting time in SaaS, I guess, the beginning of January, because you have a fair bit of churn, actually, where I think people are just reviewing their subscriptions and cancelling. You know, I think we all do it. So there was a little bit of that. But also, it's been a really good time for sales and onboarding new customers. So that has also been taking up quite a bit of my time. So we launched a couple of big new features that were customers have been requesting. So the main one was Shopify gift card support. So when someone finishes a survey, we can generate them a gift card and send it to them, which a lot of people have been asking for. And we also have done a partnership to add monetization onto the surveys. So if brands want to, they can opt in, and effectively there are like special offers from national retailers shown on the final step of the survey that can be like another revenue channel for them. So that has that's been pretty busy. But yeah, I have made progress on the challenge as well. So next newsletter is out this week. I'm going to be doing them every 2 weeks because I'm trying to maximize the amount of time that I'm actually executing on this as well. But yeah, a bit of a change from last week, actually. So my focus has been on validating those traction channels like we talked about. So really trying to work out, you know, how can I, you know, acquire customers onto this app affordably and, you know, predictably. And through that process, I was doing a ton of research on keywords, basically. So a couple of tools I'm going to be writing about a little bit is, I guess the obvious one is the Google Search Keyword Planner, which is like a free tool, and you can use that to get some fantastic suggestions on traffic levels of keywords and relationships and that kind of stuff. So I was doing that, putting in all the different keywords I thought I might be able to get customers in on for that, for the app we talked about last time. So I think I had a couple of ideas. One of them was this transformer for video content into help desk articles, blog posts, all that kind of stuff. So I was looking with that, and also I was using the Keywords Everywhere Chrome plugin, which I super, super recommend. You can get a ton of credits for it for like $10, and it does a lot of what you might kind of subscribe to an expensive tool like SEMrush for. So it kind of gives you the traffic levels on keywords, and again, what related search terms people are looking for. So really, really useful when you're in this validation stage of an idea, trying to work out, you know, what's the search traffic for this? What are the keywords? What are the bids that people are bidding on for these keywords in terms of ads? So yeah, that kind of led me slightly away from that idea, actually, because some of the keywords were that I thought, you know, had meaningful traffic were prohibitively expensive, I think, compared to what I was going to be able to charge for that product. So that kind of led me back to the drawing board on testing out some other ideas. And I've tested a couple of others, and I think I've got the one that I'm actually going with now, which is going to be closer to what I've done before with another Shopify app. So I've done some tests on the Shopify App Store to acquire customers onto it with the App Store ads. I've ran some test ads on there, and the cost per customer acquisition is significantly better, and I think I can also get a decent cost per click on Google as well for this other app. So yeah, I think it's just a good illustration of, you know, I was super excited to build this other AI app at the beginning, and that's what I wanted to do. But actually, when you look into it and really look at the business case of, you know, what am I going to be charging for this app? How much can I acquire customers for onto it? And what would I predict the churn to be? And, you know, the payback time, you know, I would be needing customers to be sticking with that app for kind of 3 or 4 months, which I kind of wanted something that I could probably have a higher price and earn back the acquisition cost earlier. So that's why I'm kind of going back to this other Shopify idea. But yeah, I'm going to cover a ton. In the newsletter, I'm going to cover all the figures and everything that I put into this, all the calculations of, you know, why I made that decision in there. But I think it's kind of a good illustration of, you don't always end up building the thing that maybe you wanted to at the beginning. Like when you look at it in the cold light of day, of you know, especially within the eyes of this challenge of trying to get it to 1,000 relatively quickly, it kind of zeroes down on what's possible, which is, I think, a good thing as well. So yeah, it's good progress, but it's mostly been with the positioning and the acquisition side of it. I think the build is going to be still very quick. I'm aiming to get that done in kind of the next week in a bit. So hopefully next time we talk, build should be done. And then it's really going to be then executing the customer acquisition plan. So running the ads at a bigger scale and getting stuff on there. So yeah, interesting couple of weeks, but it's a good kind of accelerated view of what I went through on the previous app, I guess. I'm going to try and apply everything I've learned with that into this.
So how different is this new idea or revised idea going to be in terms of the build, the technical functionality?
I don't think the build is radically different. I think the only things that change is that it's obviously going to use the Shopify auth and Shopify's billing instead of Stripe, which isn't really a big deal. I've done it before, so I still get people writing to me every week asking how to do it. So that has also kind of pushed me into this direction. It was like there are a lot of people who want to do this, and there isn't really much content out there about how to do some of the more complex stuff, like signing webhooks and doing the auth and all this stuff that is quite specific to doing stuff with Shopify. I think the app build itself won't be radically different. It's just a couple of different API calls probably, but I think the core reason for doing this is we have a fairly predictable channel to acquire customers there, which is just so valuable, especially when we've got a limited amount of time. I think we should be able to put money into the ads and get sales through out the other end fairly predictably with this, which is kind of important, especially when we're trying to do it in such a quick beat. It may evolve later on, but yeah, that's kind of the thinking right now.
That is radical thinking, the fact that you've actually done all this research. Like, I would never ever have delayed a build in favor of actually doing research and trying to figure out the numbers and like the payback period and acquisition of customers and all this stuff. Did you actually do put some ads out there, or are you just basing this on like keyword research?
A bit of both. So for Google, it's all been with using the keyword research tools. For the Shopify app store, there isn't really any kind of keyword research tool. So what I've done is just run some test ads that are pointing to my existing app, just with new search phrases, just to see what kind of traffic they get, what the cost is and all this kind of stuff. I've run a couple of tests with those. You're not going to get much of, you're not going to get anything on conversion from that test, because obviously the app that they go to isn't, super, super targeted as what the new one will be. But it does give you that data to say, okay, yeah, this ad is highly affordable. There is a lot of traffic. There is not really any competitor ads or apps on these terms that are really, really good. So I think that also is another good sign. You can get a lot of data out of these free keyword tools for Google that will really tell you, is that going to be an acquisition channel that will work? And later on, that also informs your content strategy, because obviously for Userloop, I look at those same reports and then I build content out on the blog to then rank organically for those terms, which is working really, really well. With Userloop, we're managing to hit first page of results, first few slots on most of our target phrases. And that is with the blog being on Bubble, which, is not good, obviously. And the page speed not being great either. So even despite that, we're managing to rank. That is on my list to improve. And I think there's some interesting solutions coming out. Chad Sikonchik has got a fantastic new solution to this that I'm looking to try at some point that does caching on that. But even without it, we're doing okay. So at the moment, I'm kind of, it's a great way of doing the research. And then if you've got a tight timeline like I have on the challenge, obviously you're looking at it from a point of view for ads, but actually a lot of the same stuff applies to content as well, just for your blog.
I feel like I need to move in with you and just watch you doing all this stuff. The podcast isn't enough. I can't get enough information, but yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to the newsletter. And this is all stuff I really, really want to learn about, because I've tried doing some keyword research before, but I just don't really know what I'm doing and what I'm looking for, and what conclusions I can draw from the numbers. So yeah, it'll be fascinating to follow this. So the keywords or the kind of pitch for this app is going to be to Shopify store owners, you can turn video content into all these other
No, so the actual functionality of app is going to be a bit different. It is still AI led, but it's not an exact replica, like feature for feature. It's not because video doesn't quite work on Shopify, so it's not that same thing.
Okay.
But yeah, I'll kind of go into it a bit more in the future ones. But yeah, it's more about focusing on the acquisition channel than the product itself, I guess, which for me is like you say, is very difficult because I would love to have just got in there and built the thing already and have got it out, which is what I normally would do. But yeah, for this, I wanted to try and put the research first, which is leading me into a direction that I probably didn't want to go. You know, I wanted to build this other app. I thought it would be cool. But then that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to make money. So, it's trying to not just scratch my indie hacker itch of building the cool thing and actually building something that I think could do the revenue. So, it is a different approach for me too. But a lot of the stuff is, once you kind of go through the steps of how to use these keyword research tools, it's not as intimidating as you think. Because I think a lot of the time when you look at these, you know, tools like SEMrush and Ahrefs and stuff and all these keyword planning tools, they're so big. Like the left-hand navigation is sort of like 30 different things. But yeah, I think at the beginning you can certainly begin with something more simple. These plugins and the Google, the free Google thing is great.
Well, yeah, it's just fascinating, and I'm very glad that you are doing it this different way. Well, but what about the fact that you needed this other tool to help you with your stuff? It was something you were going to use. Are you just going to continue cobbling together a difficult workflow?
Yeah, I mean, I have still been doing it in the old, like for all these product launches of the last week or two, I've been still doing it. And I did also read a tweet today of some, apparently there's in the new Microsoft Copilot, it can actually do this. So that's also been, maybe this is not super defensible either. All these kind of AI dependent things, yes, there is a big opportunity there, but also it's changing so quickly. That was also another worry, is that, you know, I don't care, to be honest, as long as I can, there is some solution for it that comes out, then that's great. And it's probably just as well that I didn't go and build it myself if it's, going to be something that's in these other tools. So yeah, I guess it's just a reminder to not always get super, super attached to the first idea you have and to really check it out. And validate it before you go off building stuff in Bubble, even though as fun as it is, this other stuff can actually save you a lot of time in the long run. So even though it has cost me probably a week, I'm kind of glad it's happened rather than me doing it and then kind of getting, you know, build the thing and then having to start again. I'd rather know now. So all good, I think.
Yeah, I think it illustrates the importance of finding a niche, which in your case is Shopify store owners. But if you start with an idea and no target niche, then if it's, you know, a big and fairly obvious idea like repurposing video content into loads of other stuff, then it's only a matter of time before the big players come and just do it. And at the rate things are developing, they'll do it pretty soon. So perhaps hasn't got as much shelf life. But if you had found a specific niche that needs that and is willing to pay for it, then your prospects are looking much better.
Definitely, and I think that, you know, that shelf life thing comes into the whole LTV of the customer, and you know that calculation I was looking at. Because if you're paying to acquire that customer and they only keep it for a month because some other way of doing it comes out and they just churn, you're losing money on you know, acquiring them. So that kind of, it's all kind of interconnected. But yeah, interesting lesson. And I'm looking forward to writing about it. I've been working on a little video that will go with this newsletter as well, just showing how these keyword tools work, and how you would research ideas with it and basically come to some kind of hypothesis of how much you will pay to acquire a customer, what you will charge them, how long you think they will stay, how long it will take you to pay back that acquisition cost, all this kind of nuts and bolts SaaS stuff, really. That will be out this Friday. So that will be interesting for everyone to see.
And where can people go to subscribe to your newsletter?
So it's just at nocodesaas.io. It's just a Substack free. You can sign up there and follow along see how it goes. It's definitely a challenge because just with the day-to-day of running the my main app in the background as well, doing this it's definitely a lot to do both, but I think there's a lot of transferable stuff between both, and it's great to keep up to date with how to build an app from scratch in Bubble as well, because I think as we spoke about last week, when you get to an app of a certain scale, it's more of maintenance and performance and all that kind of stuff, not so much building from scratch.
Yeah, but we're already learning so much from you, and I'm just grateful that you're doing this project because it's very interesting.
Cool, thank you.
Did you want to talk about Stripe? Do you think we've got time left?
Yeah, I think we could have a quick chat about Stripe. So what I wanted to talk about there was just, I think we touched on it at the beginning, but when you are starting out with building a new app, obviously I think most people probably start their Stripe integration by just using the built-in Bubble Stripe plugin, which really, actually, when you look at it like later on, it's pretty limited in what it does. It will get you the ability to charge a card and start a subscription and all that stuff. But actually, you will notice later on, as you kind of start doing more volume, that a lot of edge cases just aren't covered unless you properly integrate webhooks and stuff like that. The other thing is, on last few projects I've started with Bubble, we've also been using the Stripe payment gateway. So there's like a third-party plugin, I think that's about $10, $20 on Stripe, on Bubble, that lets you use the Stripe payment gateway, and that lets people manage their plans, change their card, cancel, move between plans, all that stuff, which to build in Bubble does take quite a while. So if you do go down that route of using a payment kind of portal, you've then got to really make sure all the webhooks are set up correctly, which is, I think, something that we've spoken about before, because there are, probably 100 different Stripe webhooks you can subscribe to. So there's an awful lot there to catch all the different scenarios. So is that something that you're looking at with your boilerplate to try and address some of that? Because it's definitely something that I've come across, that you just find yourself having to build over and over again to catch all these different scenarios of cards expiring and all the rest of it. Is that something you're going to cover?
I mean, I've never gone much further than using the stock Bubble Stripe plugin to do the creation of subscriptions, and then using the Stripe billing portal to enable customers to manage their their card details, their address, and their subscription, and then integrating a couple of webhooks to catch all the updates. And I've always found it to work pretty well. I've never needed to build an extremely complex payment related app, and to be honest, I don't really want to. But for the sake of most SaaS products, I've found that the combination of those three things works quite reliably, and I've done quite a lot of testing just to see how the different webhooks respond and what kind of responses you get depending on what actions occur. So like, one thing that's really important is if you use the Stripe plugin on your current user, you automatically get a load of different fields related to Stripe, but including like the Stripe customer ID and all this stuff. But if you accidentally delete the Stripe plugin, you lose all of that information on the customer. And also, if a customer cancels their subscription, suddenly all of the fields related to that subscription are empty. It doesn't have anything. It doesn't say subscription cancelled. It just says, just everything goes blank. So what I always do, which I think is like a good thing to do, is when a subscription is created, I duplicate a lot of the fields onto the user or onto a separate subscription data type, so that I have records of all those things in case they cancel their subscription and the things get deleted, but I want to know what happened, because you don't even get like a date of deletion or anything. And then, so I think in the last few months, Stripe actually released a new version of the billing portal where you don't need any plugin. It's just a link. So you don't need to pay for a plugin anymore. You literally get a standard URL from your Stripe dashboard, and you just have a navigate to this external website button somewhere in your app. They click it, it asks them to put in their email address, or you can pre-fill the email address if you want to, and then it sends them an email with a secure link to their Stripe billing portal. So that is now the way I give them access to the billing portal. It's really, really easy. And I have seen a number of quite big websites using that exact method. So I think it's like, it's okay to have this email that goes with the secure link, and it, yeah, it works reliably. And then the last part is the webhooks that you need to subscribe to. And the only events that I subscribe to are the subscription updated and subscription deleted, I think it's called. And that seems to capture all of the, well, as far as I've seen, if a user cancels their subscription, even if they cancel it now, but it's going to keep going until the end of the period, you get enough information from that, because it's quite useful actually. If they cancel it, but they still want to use it until the end of the period, Stripe will send through a webhook to you. But the only thing that changes is that it has a yes, no field, which is cancel at period end. And that will change to yes. So you know from that the user, it has started to cancel, but the subscription status is still active. So as far as your app is concerned, as long as you're checking for that active status, you can continue to give them access. And then at the end of that period, it will send through another webhook that will say subscription cancelled. So if you just base access of the app on this active and cancelled status, and you'll have this additional little flag that says they're canceling at the end of this period. So if you wanted to like start sending them emails saying, please don't go, then you can do that because you know about that. And you can also show your subscription is canceling at the end of the period so they know it's worked. But yeah, apart from that, it all seems to work quite smoothly. So that's how I do it anyway. Oh, I can't hear you. I think you're muted.
Oh yeah, sorry. Yeah, no, that's some great info. Certainly around those kind of cancellation scenarios, because yeah, when there's been a couple of different ways of handling it historically. Like I've done it before with like scheduling a workflow when they've pressed cancel and then to cancel their plan at the end of the current period. But yeah, that's certainly better to kind of rely on the webhooks to tell you as and when things change, to make sure you know you're keeping everything up to date. The other thing, I'm interested to check out this new payment portal. I think it would be important for me to be able to send through like the Stripe customer ID and email and stuff. I don't know if it's through URL parameters or how they're doing that with the new URL version, but I think for it to feel like fully integrated into the app, you kind of want to pass through that if possible, because yeah, the plugin does that really nicely. I was just looking actually, it's the Cranford Tech Stripe customer portal plugin is the one that I've been using, and that handles it pretty well, where you just give it the Stripe customer's ID and then it will log, takes you into the portal for that customer, so that's pretty good. But yeah, I'll be interested to see this new way, if there's a way of doing it now without plugins.
Yeah, I think you can pre-fill the email address, and I think they can't change the email address once it's pre-filled. But that's all you can send through.
Cool, that makes sense. Nice. Well, it's good to touch on a bit of kind of techie stuff there at the end, because I think this is a problem that apps do kind of come across once they've gone past that MVP stage, and you know, you're getting into having more customers and different scenarios with cards and all that stuff. And it is important to make sure that, you know, Bubble and Stripe are in sync, because I think once it can be a bit of a nightmare to get them back in sync if things go out of sync. So yeah, relying on those webhooks is super important. So I'm going to be really interested to see and try out your boilerplate when it comes out, because that is certainly something I've spent hours and hours on in previous apps, getting all of that logic right, because it can end up being quite complex, especially when you're doing emails and all that kind of stuff, as like flows and stuff as well, trying to manage, you know, reducing churn. So awesome. I think we're kind of coming towards the end of the episode today. I realise also next week and over the next week, we really need to start announcing some of our speakers for the No Code UK event that is coming up in May. Tickets are still, early bird tickets are still on sale. We're doing really well on ticket sales. So I think we're going to have a really good crowd there. Some, you know, pretty all the big names that you probably recognize on Twitter hopefully are going to be there, and it's going to be a really good kind of couple of day of us going through and doing kind of real world examples and builds and all this stuff of people who've actually done it with no code building SaaS with no code. So really excited about that coming up soon on the Tuesday the 21st of May. So it's going to come around quicker than we think, I think. So yeah, going to be interested to kind of get those speakers out there and hear what everyone thinks. But yeah, do check that out. It's at yep.so/p/nocodeuk, or you can just head to nocodeuk.org and you'll find everything about the tickets there. We've got a new website that we'll be launching soon, haven't we, Kieran, that lists out much more about what's going to be happening, all the speakers and everything. But if you do want to bag those early bird tickets, then head over there now to get that earlier special kind of price that we're doing. I think that's it then for this week, Kieran, unless there's anything else you wanted to touch on.
No, that's all good. Yeah, looking forward to next time and hearing more updates from you.
Yeah, likewise. Great. Well, thanks for listening, everyone. If you have any comments or anything, feel free to reach out to us on Twitter or reply back on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Leave us a review. It's always like mega, mega appreciated. I don't think we have many at the moment. So if you do want to leave us a review, we will really, really appreciate it. And if you want to send us a voice message, you can head to podline.fm/nocodesass. So any kind of questions or topics you'd like us to cover, leave us a voice message. We would love to hear from you, because we do get messages from you, but it would be great to hear your voice as well, because it's always a nice way to connect with people. But yeah, I think that's it for this week. So yeah, thanks, Kieran. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back soon.
Yeah, thanks, James. Thanks, everyone, for listening.
Bye.